Good morning and welcome to a special edition of Wanda's Picks. We are so excited. We're joined in the studio presently by two of the cast for San Francisco Playhouse's regional premiere of Tree. And I was going to read bios first, but I think what we'll do first is we're waiting for the playwright, Julie, how do you pronounce Julie's last name? Is it
Hebert?
Hebert.
Hey Bear.
Yeah.
Hey Bear.
Like Hey Bear.
No,
Hey Bear. Here she is. We were just talking about her, and she calls in. Oh, morning,
you guys
Julie.
Conjured me. Hi, this is Julie.
Julie.
Oh, yay.
Hi,
Julie.
I sure encountered you.
Hi, Julie.
Hi. Hey, Carl. Long time, man.
Yes, I know. I know. And in fact, you called in just in time because you know how much of a stickler I am for last names. So maybe you could pronounce yours for Wanda.
A-Bear.
A-Bear.
Yeah.
Oh, how cute.
A-Bear, like A-Bear in the woods.
Yeah, A-Bear. Wow, that's really neat. Wow, yeah. So, Susie, congratulations on your 12th anniversary of San Francisco Playhouse.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been quite a wonderful ride and seems to just keep getting better and better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so I don't kill your last name, Susie. Pronounce it for us.
It's Damilano, and I find the easiest way for people to pronounce it is to put your fingers together like you're a very strong Italian and wave it around, and then if you say Damilano, it comes out a lot easier.
Right. That's cool. Yeah, and Carl, you've been on the show before. The last time you were talking about your character, Troy, in August Wilson's Fences, and here we are having you join us again to talk about this new role in Tree. And so, you know, Tree is a winner of the Penn Award for Drama and Backstage Garden Award, and it's a story of three generations divided by race, culture, and time. And according to the press release, the play has contemporary resonance, posing questions about family and what it means to be related. The story unfolds when a Southern white woman, and that's your character, right, Susie?
Yep.
Uh-huh. Shows up at the home of an African-American man in Chicago, and that's your character, right, Carl?
And that's correct.
Yeah, and she claims to be his half-sister. Like, wow. Impelling them to confront a shared past in their search for the truth. They must navigate the fragmented memories of the man's aged mother to discover where their roots intersect. And my first question is for you, Julie, and then I'll go back and read your bios. But sort of where does the story come from? Is it one like, you know, sort of you're mining something from your own culture or from your own family's history? Or is this, you know, imaginative and... Yeah, because it resonates so, it has a real current resonance now in our country with, you know, what's going on, you know, pre and post Ferguson.
Yes, thank you. The original idea for the play came from sort of two places. One, I have... my mom and dad were about to throw out some letters that he had written to her during the Korean War when he was in the Marine Corps. And so I have about 200 letters that he wrote. And I said, oh, I'll take them and and read them. And in reading them, I felt that the kid that wrote the letters, the young man who was like 19, 20, 21 years old, was this very hopeful young boy that didn't seem like my dad. You know, it seemed like another person. And I wanted to really understand who he was and how what his dreams had been and how his life veered off into the life that I knew. So that was one part of it. And the other part of it is I grew up in a small town in South Louisiana. And when I was a kid, Jim Crow laws were still in place. So I... And in this small town where the street that I grew up was, there were black families and white families on the street in the same block. So we knew each other very well. There was a lot of closeness, and then there was also these laws in place, and the black kids went to a separate school than we went to until, I guess, when I was about, it took until 1969 for the busing and the desegregation to come to our town and our schools. So I would have been in ninth grade then. And so until that point, we lived close by. We knew each other well, but there was this legal separation and all of that. So I always did write about race, always thought about race, always wanted to talk about it. And when I grew up and went back to New Orleans to run a theater company, became very good friends with a woman named Rosalind Bell, who's also a writer, African-American woman, my age, and grew up about an hour away from me. And so we compared notes about what it was like to be a white kid and a black kid growing up where we grew up, because we shared so much culture, recipes and vocabulary and family stories. There was so much in common, and yet there was this fierce divide. You know, there was this very, she had a very different experience than I did. She had to know very early on how to read a sign that said whites only. And I didn't need to know what that meant. You know, I mean, I was in a car with my sister waiting for my mom, and we were outside of a laundromat, and there was a sign in the window that said whites only. And my little sister and I just giggled and laughed about that. We're thinking, like, these people are crazy. They only wash white clothes. So we could afford not to know what that meant, you know, and be oblivious to that in a way that Rosalind couldn't. So another big part of the play was, because I've written about Caucasian and African American relationships in other plays and in other areas, but what I really wanted to do with this play, and you know, I mean, it's just a minefield to try to talk about race in America, even as we know now, still with, you know, Obama and Ferguson and all that, it still is a kind of a very, very difficult subject where people have sensitivities and don't understand each other. And so what I wanted to do with the play was to try to have, even if it was just within my own mind, an honest conversation about what it meant. And so it started to be, I wanted to have a white person and a black person talking honestly and attempting to get through to something real. And so for me, the play started to, in that place, it started to be about race. And then by the time I got to the end of the play and these people were so real and the people at some point, the characters take over and start talking, it ends up to be a play about family. And race takes a back seat to the relationship that develops among these people. And then overall, I felt that maybe that's a good place to start and a good place to end for the play.
Yeah.
Does that make sense, Wanda?
Oh, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I was just thinking, I was born in New Orleans, and I was just in New Orleans last week for the conference at the Ogden Museum of Southern Art, honoring and celebrating Robert Ferris Thompson's Flash of the Spirit, African and Afro-American Art and Philosophy. And so I was like, oh, what a small world that you grew up there. I grew up in San Francisco, the home of the San Francisco Playhouse. But it wasn't there when I was growing up, but it's there now. But I think the building was there because I think that's a historic building, right? Where the theater is located.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The theater is located in a very historic building that the Elks built. That's mm-hmm. just beautiful with the hand carved wood and all that.
And I really love it that, you know, the Lorraine Hansberry Theater was there and now you're there. So, you know, there's a nice resonance of energy, you know, now that Stanley and Quentin are ancestors. I was wondering, before I ask you about your particular characters, Susie, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the San Francisco Playhouse and why you wanted to have this play, Tree, have its regional premiere there at the start of the new year.
Okay. Well, the San Francisco Playhouse, we are in our 11th year, which means we're in our 12th season, the way that theaters do it. And we started the company, my husband and I, Bill English, who's the artistic director, in 2003. And we started it really simply because we had a couple of plays that we wanted to do, and we couldn't find another theater that wanted to do them. So there was a space for rent. We rented it, and we were on a month-to-month lease, and that lasted for about 3 years until the landlord had to retrofit. And then we moved across the street and stayed there for 6 years. And then 2 years ago, we got to move into this beautiful building that you're talking about that was built back in 1925. It's inside the Kensington Park Hotel with the Farallon downstairs, and it marked our 10-year anniversary, which really felt like now we are here. Now we are a real theater company. And we like to do works that cover a broad spectrum, just because as humans we cover a broad spectrum. So we do very edgy work combined with some oldies, you know, oldies but goodies, and really the way I like to look at it is that we make the edgy accessible and the traditional edgy. And the Tree script, we've been reading this Tree script and having it at the top of our stack, I would say, of scripts that we love for several years. And I think what finally came into place is Carl. We love Carl, and we've been working with, I think, Carl, was your first play Jesus Hop the A-Train with
us?
Yes. No, yes.
Yes.
And I got to be in that play with Carl, but we never had stage time together. We never had a scene together. And since then, I get to tease Carl and make him blush, but Tree was, we all loved the script, and I said, hey, how about I'm your little, or no, I'm your big sister, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. So I get to taunt and tease him even more.
Yeah, so this is... This is the beauty of theater, is because I think for me, the opportunity to do this play at this theater with these people, written by this wonderful, wonderful writer and person with whom I have history that goes back to my first experiences in San Francisco, everything for me is about a tree right now. Everything is about being deeply rooted in traditions, coming from one trunk but taking many branches. I left San Francisco for a while and I drifted off in all sorts of ways. You know, formed a family of my own. Had parts of that family remain, parts of that family leave. And beyond what this piece has to say about race, I think that's what I find so amazing about it, because ultimately it is all about family. And race is an illusion. It's a choice. Mm-hmm. It's a decision that you make. There are times when you can look at, you know, a person who is completely different from you in skin color and not really see that. You know, maybe you're so caught by what you find behind their eyes that you don't notice what those eyes are riding in. And that's what moves me, shakes me. And, you know, I'm a very hard-bitten, very testosterone-filled male, but I tear up every time I think about the lives that all of these characters have been leading and what they came from, and yet at the end where what the possibilities that still exist for them because they are part of the same tree. So
yeah.
It's a privilege to do this work. I'm Julie, I'm so tickled and so proud because this is not the first year that I've seen this play. I read this play a few years ago and was so moved by it. And I will also say, you know, I thank Susie and Bill because I am not an obvious choice color-wise. For this character, but if we accept that, you know, recessive genes and dominant genes, okay,
we accept that.
Yes, right. But I think beyond that, I think these people see something in one another, familiarity of heartstring and blood. That is felt, not seen, and that's perceived, and that grows, and that can't be denied, no matter what their relationship may end up to be. In that moment, they recognize one another, and I'm very excited. That's really, and I would like to ask Wanda that you know, we go light on my bio, because as far as I'm concerned, these days, every time I do a piece, what I've done before is meaningless to me. So
that's a great way to put it.
That's it. I'm out.
Okay. Well, let me read some of these bios, and then I want you to talk some more. I want you to talk about your characters and the cast and the director and how the rehearsals are going and all that. But Julie, let's start with you. You're an award-winning writer and director of theater, film, and television. You won the Pen Award for drama twice for your plays Tree, as we already mentioned, and The Knee Desires the Dirt. You have some great titles, Dirt and Tree.
Oh, thank
nice.
You.
Yeah, Knee Desiring the Dirt, too. Wow, that sounds really fascinating. And your
We better
most
kneel
recent...
down. That's what that's about.
Oh, okay. Oh, is it about honoring, honoring the ancestors, honoring the spirit?
In a way, yes, that's life? Right. It's about, about humbling yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the Southern roots sort of come out in your titles. Yeah, and your most recent play, Night Falls, premiered at ODC in San Francisco and was co-directed by yourself and Deborah Slater and was chosen as one of the top 10 dance productions of the year. What year was that?
I think that was 2011. Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So it was about 3 years ago.
It
doesn't feel like it was that long. It might have been 2012, but I think it was 2011.
Yeah,
time flies these days, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've written and directed plays for Steppenwolf, Victory Gardens, The Magic, The Eureka, La Mama, The Woman's Project, San Diego Rep, Los Angeles Theater Center, the Contemporary Arts Center of New Orleans. Is that the theater that you founded or that you worked at? Did you mention earlier?
Yes, I was the artistic director. I went back to New Orleans in the early 90s and worked there as an artistic director for a theater company. And I know Susie and I know Carl has been an artistic director too. I think of myself now as a recovering artistic director.
That's
a very hard job, and I'm so happy when other people do it.
Fabulous.
Yeah, nice. Is that the same theater that the artistic director of The Magic was also a part of?
Loretta Greco, you mean? Or?
Not The Magic.
I meant the
Marin Theater Company. Sorry. Because he's also such.
Oh, you mean Jason Minidakis,
yeah,
right? Because I think he came from Atlanta. But I'm not certain which theater.
Oh yeah, I don't know him. I don't think he was part of the CAC in New Orleans. Not that I know of.
Maybe it was after you left because he brought the trilogy to to the Marin Theater Company, and I can't remember the name of the playwright. He had first staged it there right after Katrina because. Yeah, and I'll look up the name and tell you the name.
Oh, that
the
makes
playwright.
Sense. You know, the CAC, the Contemporary Arts Center in New Orleans, it's a really great theater company, and they produce some, but they also have people come in from out of town and work there. So maybe he developed it there and then took it to Marin.
No, this is before he came to Marin. Yeah, but I'll find the information for you. And
okay.
And then Carl Lumley, from stage to screen, is an actor respected for his steadfast talent, versatility, and class. His prolific career includes over 50 credits in television, film, and the theater, and extensive critical acclaim. Yeah, you told me to go light, so I will.
Because I am really a recovering artistic director. That is the absolute best.
Yeah. Well, we already talked about your starring role in at the San Francisco Playhouse's production of Jesus Hop the A-Train. That was awesome. Yeah, Stephen Adley Gerges' Roxas drama directed by Bill English. That was just really fantastic. Wow, that was wonderful. You were born in Minnesota, the son of Jamaican immigrants. Your father was an avid reader, which inspired you, your early appreciation for literature. And after graduating from the McAllister College with a degree in English, you landed a job writing for the Associated Press in Minneapolis, and you also supplemented your income by doing freelance writing assignments for various periodicals and magazines. You moved to San Francisco intending to continue your work as a journalist for Associated Press, and then just two days after arriving in San Francisco, not 2 days? No,
I'm sorry. I was able to continue my career as a journalist. I was waiting for the position to become available. They told me that it would take 2 weeks. And in that two-week period, I went to the looking for a couch and looked in the newspaper under the want ads, and there was a column that said performing arts column. And there wasn't one of those in Minneapolis. So I looked at it, and they said, there was an ad, two black actors needed for South African political plays. And I was intrigued, and I went to the library, and I looked at plays, and one was Sizwe Bonzi's Dead, and one was The Island. And I went to the Eureka Theater in the basement of this church, and I walked down the stairs, and there was a director there named Robert Woodruff and an actor there named Danny Glover. And one thing led to another, and that was the end of my formal journalism career.
History was made.
Yeah.
Carl, was that the very first time you performed?
Mm-hmm. Not the first time I performed as an actor. That was my first play in San Francisco. I started off in improvisational theater in Minneapolis. As a result of, again, a journalism assignment, this freelance article that I had been assigned to write. And I ended up getting there early on the wrong side of the room and was handed my audition card and thought that it would be a perfect angle from which to write the story. Some poor fool who wanted to get into the company, it was a public audition. And there were a couple hundred people showed up, and as the winnowing process continued, they kept calling me back, and then ultimately there were five people, and I was one of the five, and so I did that for a year and a half. All of these things thrilling my father. I think of my early acting career as explaining to various people that I was not going to do what they thought I was going to do. I was going to do a play instead. And it just took. I don't know what. I guess there was a lot that I needed. There was a lot that I found I could be a part of saying. Sort of, if I had been a better writer, maybe I would have wanted to be a playwright. But I think acting gave me an opportunity to stand inside these sides, in front of and behind words that I thought were important, ideas that I thought were important, step into other people's shoes and take a walk, and become less judgmental, because I was raised with a lot of judgment. Jamaicans, my parents were, as immigrants, you know, there was a lot that they required. They didn't take this trip from Jamaica to the States to have me become a dilettante. And as my father said when I told him I wanted to be an actor, why you don't put on white face, learn how to tap dance and tour the country. So,
Oh my God.
You know, it was, but that was me taking my little stand, and it's all worked out, and I've never regretted it. I've probably lost my way in it sometimes, but I've never regretted having done it.
Well, I saw that performance of Sizwe Bonzi Is Dead. I saw it multiple times. It was tremendous, and you were breathtaking in that play.
Well,
so I think, you know, you made a really brilliant choice for a career.
Yeah, I
thank you for those performances all these years, Carl.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, but enough about me.
Yeah, but then also, you know, if you wouldn't have been, you know, in your career, you wouldn't have met your wife, you know, the acclaimed actress Vanetta McGee, right? So it's a good thing.
Yes, and she was cast as my wife. Once again,
wildly
imaginative, but I saw it. Yeah, I was doing a cop show, Cagney and Lacey, and I had actually had the character had two wives, but the actresses, when they were called back to come back on a recurring basis, had other things to do, or so they said. so it turned out that they had written another part for a wife, and they held auditions, and they cast Vanetta. And actually, the day we met, the first thing we did was in bed. So the day before we worked, I called her up, and I said, you know, I know who you are, and you're a beautiful woman, and you're in Hollywood, and I know that probably things happen sometimes, and I just want you to know, if you're uncomfortable with anything, you're running this scene, and anything that you find objectionable, or things and ways in which you want this to be done so that you maintain your dignity, and we work together, that's what I want. And then we worked together, and then I guess a couple weeks later she told me that that was what had helped to sway it, because, you know, on the face of it, it was slightly unlikely that we would have gotten together. She told me, actually, as a compliment, that I was the first man she'd ever dated who wasn't hip. And
oh my God!
Yeah. It was the first time I ever reveled in my squareness, actually. So yes, I wouldn't have. There's a lot that would never have happened to me if I wasn't an actor. And in fact, I think probably that's part of what strikes me about this character. This is a man who, you know, has the potential to be all sorts of things, but is held back by himself.